Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
I'm Cyndi Lauper. My psoriasis was all over, even on my scalp, which may mean four times the risk for psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx works on both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX. Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
Save big money on everything for your projects. Now at Menards. We have it all for garden and landscaping essentials. Visit our outdoor garden center today and update your backyard space. Grid accents lattice panels have a timeless design with an innovative design that's simple to install and requires almost no maintenance. Save big on lattice panel options at Menards. View our entire selection of garden center products today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night, and building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at Believe Network. Today is Monday, September 18th, and this episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Guys, football is back. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I'll let you decide. But either way, it's back, and BetOnline is your number one information source for all your sports wagering info. With up-to-the-minute stats, news, scores, and matchup breakdowns, get the latest game odds, spreads, and totals from the NFL, college football at your fingertips with BetOnline's real-time updates on statistics, news, and odds. From the week one all the way to the college football playoff and Super Bowl, BetOnline gives you access to the best football promotions and contests available anywhere online. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. And remember to use your promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. This week in Michigan State football may have been where the season ended. John, that was not great.
No, it was not. It could have been a lot worse, but Washington called the Husky Dogs off. And I'll tell you, I didn't even like drink during the game. Like I was, I had no interest in it. Like it didn't sound fun. And then I would say like the entire game, I found myself looking at the screen with like a very questioned and terrified face. Like, what am I looking at? Like, it was truly astonishing. And after the game, I watched the whole thing. I'm insane. I walked down to my basement. I grabbed a bottle of Malort, and I took a drink because I thought that that would be a better taste in my mouth than what I just watched. And it was. And that was helpful. It did help a little. But how was your experience?
Bad. I wish I had the same type of willpower that you had, because you may not have drank. I had a few. Yeah, I mean, this one was over pretty much right off the bat, too. I mean, we went into this game thinking like, okay, we know Washington is super talented. We know Michael Penix Jr. is, you know, a dynamite quarterback. We know, you know, a lot of things about how this could go. We're like, listen, we know what Michigan State, this team just went through a week ago. This could potentially get very out of hand. And Washington wasted no time in making sure that it did. I mean, they were up 14-0 at the end of one. Felt like it could have been more, up 35-0 at halftime. And like you said, they pretty much called the dogs off, where this could have been, you know, this could have been a much uglier score than what already was a very ugly score. But it was, I guess the biggest thing that I'm upset with myself about for this one is that I did not bet on a Jeremy Bernard anytime touchdown scorer, because that was the most inevitable thing ever. And he did it right off the bat. And I think that actually speaks to like a larger note here, is that I think the most damning part about this is that it didn't even look like Michigan State belonged on the same field as Washington, like athlete-wise.
Right.
I mean, Jeremy jumped out. This is a guy who was at Michigan State last year, jumped out on that first touchdown run that he had as just a better athlete. He made Cal Halliday, who, yes, you know, God bless him and, you know, his ability to make tackles and defend the run. He made him look like he should be playing for Bowling Green or Eastern Michigan or some MAC school, just making them look silly. And he's their fourth best receiver. I mean, it's their tight end had three touchdowns. It was just a clinic. This team had like less than 100 yards rushing on the season and had two guys have more than 70, including a 45-yard run by Dylan Johnson in this game alone. And neither of those guys scored the rushing touchdown. That was Jeremy Bernard. Penix was absolutely dynamite, 473 yards and four touchdowns through the air. He was thrown to wide open targets half the time. I really think this is rock bottom, truly. Like, since the, in terms of just like a thud type of performance and everything else that's going around the program, this is hopefully the lowest as it's going to get. You know, I felt like during the 2-5 season, we might have, you know, the 2020, the weird COVID year, you found some pretty dark moments there, some pretty bleak performances like against Iowa, but you still had those flashes that year. This year, this is bleak. It's feeling very bleak given everything that's going on.
Well, it's not rock bottom because.
Great.
MSU will be playing more games against teams that have that much talent or more. So while it's no coincidence, those teams that I'm talking about have elite quarterbacks. If your whole like thing is we're fine unless we play a team that can throw the ball, like this isn't like 1962 and there's like a coach that hasn't seen the forward pass yet and was like, wait, do that? Like, that, here's the biggest problem, is that I watched that game. Everyone that's listened watched that game. in 2021 against Ohio State, who yep. also had a first-round quarterback and who also had three NFL wide receivers. And we watched that and we were like, okay, that is how far away we are. Got it. Noted. We're 2 years removed from that game almost. And it was just as bad. In every way possible, it was just as bad. Michael Penix came on the field and would score in how many plays he decided. Like it was like watching 7-on-7s, but like it was 7-on-5. I can't be more descriptive of how poor the whole idea was. And I think the worst part was you didn't see, despite the rosters being fairly more near in talent than you'd expect. Is that fair, Austin? Like,
Yes, but go ahead. Finish your thought.
Washington is a more talented team. That's indisputable. You saw it. They are not 35-0 at halftime more talented. The coaching, now that's a completely different situation, right? Like just body to body, it's not that big of a gap. You added in the coaching and it became that big of a gap immediately.
Yeah, I mean, if you have to give Washington and everything that they have going on as program a ton of credit. This is going to be a difficult offense for anybody to slow down. I mean, they have four really very good receivers, including at least two that could go in the first round in Odunze and McMillan and Jalen Polk, who has now, I think, in 2 years has like 350 yards receiving and three touchdowns against Michigan State in two games. I mean, I think if he played against MSU every game, he'd be the greatest receiver of all time. Odunze, 8 catches for 180 yards. McMillan, 4 for 96. I mean, we talked about all these guys, and they all lived up to everything that we said. They each had a catch of at least 38 yards. It was every bit as bad as it seemed and as it looks in the box score and all of that. Take a half step back. Again, Washington's going to be tough for anybody to beat. I really think that they're a legit playoff contender. This game did nothing to sway my opinion there. But at the same point in time, like you said, this is what an early season Big Ten versus, you know, 1AA matchup is supposed to look like. This is supposed to be what Washington does to the San Jose State Spartans, not the Michigan mm-hmm. State Spartans. So it's difficult to see the team perform like that. And I don't even, you know, defensively, hey, you always knew they were going to come out and put up points. I think it's the offense that was really the more disheartening thing because, and it speaks to a larger issue that I think speaks to an even larger issue. Michigan State just looked completely helpless on offense. I mean, totally unable to run the ball. Longest run of the day was 9 yards. Noah Kim looked justifiably scared for his life after the first drive of the game. Went 12 of 31 for 136 yards, no touchdowns, one interception. Caden Hauser did come in and score, you know, a touchdown in garbage time. Was the only points of the day for MSU. So congratulations to Caden. It's exciting. Got on the board. It's great. But, you know, it doesn't even hold a candle to what you need from a team. And they were just completely and totally dominated in the trenches, really on both sides of the ball, but specifically on offense. And I think, you know, going into this game again, maybe you kind of knew some of that was going to happen. But the fact that I think we all felt like, okay, Michigan State's going to be totally outclassed, defensive line versus offensive line, is a huge indictment of the coaches that admittedly were dealing with a lot this week, a very lot. But the fact of the matter remains that this game's been on the schedule for how long? They should have been prepping for this forever. They knew it was coming, and it looked like somebody told them, oh, guess what? You're playing Washington later today. Figure it out.
Yep.
And that to me is not good. So I have a larger statement to say, John, but I want to give you a chance to share any extra thoughts you had.
Mel Tucker has no situation that result happens. I'm just saying, like, if this, nothing had happened to the team and the coaches were distracted and the players weren't distracted, like, Washington was going to, from what I saw, the prep, the talent, Washington was going to win that game. No matter, right? So I am going to give everyone the excuse that they deserve, which was it was the most distracting week of work in probably any of their lives. I just don't want to confuse that Washington was still the better program and that far ahead of Michigan State's program, regardless of that situation, though. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like I don't think that Mel Tucker being on the sidelines changes much about this game.
Right.
Yeah, but, and I totally agree. And I think, again, that that – here's what I've seen. So if you, I think you're at a point now as a program, right, where you kind of have – you have two choices in terms of the direction of the program and who's going to be at the helm. One is to see how this team does this year. Give Harlan Barnett an honest-to-God chance, and potentially stick with the, we'll call it consistency route. Keep the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, offensive line coach, same guys who have been around the last few years that these players are comfortable with in place, and let HB be the main guy, right? So that's one route. The other route is tear the whole thing down, start over, maybe lose some guys in the transfer portal, try to pull a Wisconsin or a Colorado and actually bring a bunch of talent in, and then, you know, kind of start on the path that Mel Tucker was getting started on, which was actually putting together some good recruiting classes. Maybe you're even able to do that if you hire the right guy. So it's, you know, stability and, you know, well, if you want to call it that, more of just like continuing to doing what you're doing or committing to something brand new. I think the odds, based on what happened last week, were always pointing in the direction of something new. But this game really crystallized it for me. And it has nothing to do with Harlan Barnett. It really doesn't. It has nothing to do with him. It has everything to do with Chris Kapilovic, Scotty Hazleton specifically, and Jay Johnson. None of those three guys have improved any of the veterans that play on any given week since they came to Michigan State. Nick Samak and J.D. Duplain have always, when they came, those guys were, you know, all conference like mention type of guys. They haven't taken a step up from that. They clearly weren't able to hang with what we would call an elite defensive front group like Washington has. They haven't improved. Look around the entire defense. What veteran have you seen take noticeable steps from year one to year two to year three under the tutelage of these people? I would argue almost none. Cal Halliday is the same guy. You know, you say, okay, he's this great story, but he was the same guy as a true freshman as he is today. There's really no difference. They've done a good job, you know, admirably finding guys through the transfer portal, but what Michigan State was able to do and what great programs that are not, and even the ones that are, these marquee landmark college football institutions, what they do better than anybody else is they coach up young men and they make them better at what they do. They accentuate the strengths. They lower the floor on the weaknesses. Michigan State hasn't done any of that. I look at a guy like Spencer Brown specifically. Like, this dude has everything in the toolbox. He was a four-star recruit at a program that doesn't get a ton of them. I think he was either really high three or low four, depending on the service you look at. But if you look at him, all get off the bus team type of guy as an offensive lineman. He hasn't taken a single step in any direction, forward or backwards, since the day that he came to campus. And that is not his fault, I don't think. I think that's a failure of the coaching staff that's been around him. It's just that, to me, is what I took away from this game, is that Michigan State, regardless of who is the head man, does not have the other position coaches or infrastructure in place to make players better as they go along in their careers. And that's not fair to them. And that means these guys who are, by the way, not cheap. They're paid extremely well for assistant head coaches. Position coaches. Some of them are associate head coaches. Like, these are some of the highest paid not head coaches in the country, and they are not living up to what they should be living up to, given what they're being paid commensurate with the other types of, you know, people that are doing the same thing within their own conference and across the country. So to me, this game, while I do think that in a vacuum, this was always going to happen in some way, shape, or form, this blowout loss, it always felt like the likely outcome. The fact that nobody, that this is somehow worse than last year, significantly, and last year was terrible, that, you know, I just think there's an obvious thing that has to happen, and how we get to that point, I'm not sure. But this game solidified for me that that's the route you have to take as a program.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, this is year four, and if you want to do year zero, you know, then this is year three. You don't lose games by that much in year three of a rebuild. There needs to have been improvement, right? Like, they ran the same scheme defensively as exact same. I mean, like, you knew it wasn't going to work. You knew it wasn't going to work. And like, and it's like, you want to say like, well, we don't have the guys. And it's like, well, in today's age, yeah, you do. You can get the guys.
There's no shortage of talent.
And we have the guys on the team too, right? So
I think offensively you can make a case like not the most explosive skill players. That's fine. Okay. I'll give you that. But even so, we've seen enough explosiveness from Jaren Glover. We've seen all Christian Fitzpatrick has done is make big plays. We've seen Tyrell Henry be explosive. Yes, they're young guys, but like, it's not like there's no talent on offense. Defense, especially in the front seven, that might be the most talented. We talked about it here several times. They might be the most talented position group or area in the whole team. Mm-hmm. And nothing changes, though. And there's no answer. You gave up 700 yards of offense. 700. And this team took their foot all the way off the gas in the second half. They scored 6 points. Michigan State actually won the second half of this game, 7-6. That's how little they were trying, because they didn't have to. And it's damning. It is absolutely damning. And this doesn't mean that Michigan State's not going to win a game the rest of the season or anything like that. But what I do think it says is that I don't see any way that you don't clean house. And unfortunately for Harlan Barnett, I don't think that means him staying on as the head man and being the one that cleans house, which is too bad, because he's been put in a very difficult position as the interim here. But that's just, I can't see any way around it.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great guy. He's a nice guy. He was so nice that he was very accepting of every penalty that the ref explained to him the entire weekend. A lot of head nodding and thanking him, you know. It's like, it was such a mess. Like, I'm trying to even think of, like, throughout the game, I stopped keeping track, because I was like, okay, you know how we talk about, you know, we needed a couple breaks, and we talk about it in golf terms. It's like, we gotta basically get two ahead in breaks. And you just, that, which means just like no mistakes, first of all, that's just expected. Like, no, don't hurt yourself, and then you need a couple breaks. Or if you hurt yourself, they need to have had that many mistakes too. The first three drives, defensively, and two defensively, and the first offensively, MSU had six mistakes. Like, six in the first three possessions, in which became 14-0 immediately. Michigan State had the ball first, down 7-0 immediately. And it was like, I stopped keeping track, because I was like, oh, I know where this is going now. I don't need to, like, do this anymore. And it was, I don't know. It was tough to watch, because you just really wanted, the table was set for a better moment than that, a much better moment. And, but
I couldn't agree more.
The good news is, like you said, there are no more questions. Like, what has to be done is, like, obvious to everybody. And I don't see a world where you retain all of these guys, where everyone wants to stay with them after going what would likely be a losing record. I don't know. Or, you know, if you don't retain them, people are like, oh, well, people might leave. People are going to leave. That's happening. Like,
yeah,
every year that's like going to happen. So like, I don't get too worked up about that.
It's just like, I got my head in my hands right now. I'm just so disappointed, but yeah, I think that we all know what needs to happen. I think the thing that scares me and why I feel like this is rock bottom. Well, first of all, before I even go to there, this feels so incredibly familiar to me as a long suffering, and then for long periods thriving, but at a one point in time, a long suffering Michigan State fan. This is, in terms of the product they put on the field and the way they play and the stupid mistakes that they make constantly, the shooting of themselves in their own feet, it's so very John L. Smith to me. It is so painfully John L. Smith. It hurts. This is something that I never really thought would end up happening again. I mean, I thought Michigan State had graduated from that type of program, but it's obvious that maybe they did for a while, but they have come cratering back to earth. And what scares me is that the same old Spartans era was an era that was accompanied by a ton of poor university leadership, athletic department leadership. Mark Hollis came in, Mark D'Antonio came in, that changed. That was stability for a very long time. Now, Mark Hollis was let go from the university for extremely understandable circumstances. The buck stops with him. Horrible things happened under his tenure. He deserved to be let go. The fact of the matter is, he's been let go, and the university, the football program, the university in general has sort of been in turmoil kind of ever since. So what Michigan State needs to do is find that leadership from the top down. Like, and the thing that worries me is that the more we kind of learn about who knew what about Mel Tucker, the more you can sort of be skeptical that Alan Haller is really the right man to be running the athletic department. It's at least worth asking the question, whether he knew, didn't know, whatever he knew, we'll come to find out. We're not here to litigate that. That's for lawyers. But the fact that he has been a part of this to some degree, and this all went on under his, the buck has to stop somewhere. And I don't know if that's the guy that you trust to go make what is probably the most important hire for your football program, if not your, all of your athletics department, quite honestly, since Mark D'Antonio was hired. I mean, this is because you're at the same point as you were at the end of John L. Smith. We're at the exact same place again, which makes this next hire absolutely critical, because if you get it wrong, you're just spinning your wheels for another few years. You become less and less relevant in an increasingly competitive conference and college football landscape. And, you know, you might find yourself in the mushy middle for the rest of, you know, for the next 20 years, if you don't get this hire right. And I think the thing is, like I said, that scares me the most is that maybe even above Alan Haller, like, do you trust that A, he can make the decision, or B, that if it's not him, that the board of trustees can hire the right person to be the athletic director, who can then hire the right person to be the football coach. So there's much larger issues at play here that make me quite nervous as an alumni fan, all of that stuff. The one silver lining here is that it is week three going into week four. That is probably the greatest advantage that Michigan State has right now, is they have some time to figure this out. And the current season almost becomes secondary. It almost is like, okay, we know this isn't going to be a great year. Let's try to get to a bowl game, try to head into the next season with some positive momentum, if at all possible, knowing that there's change coming, and identify the right person, hire the right person, and bring in some stability. There's going to be probably significant roster overturn, and everybody should just kind of brace for that. That is in today's age, especially after the success that, you know, Deion Sanders has had early on here, whether that keeps up, we don't know. It's inevitable that coaches are going to come in and try and flip a roster for the most part. It's coming, in my opinion. I think we just need to kind of wait on it and really, really, really hope that this university can get it right.
So who does that look like? What does that type of coach look like?
I mean, to me, what Michigan State should want, and we talked about it just a second ago, was Michigan State should be looking for someone that is good at getting It's not unlike what Mark D'Antonio did, if we're being honest. I'm not saying you want to go back to the days of take all the 3 stars and 2 stars and play them up and coach them up a level. That's not what I'm saying. You want somebody who can still recruit really strongly, but also has had success either recruiting to or improving the talent at smaller universities. Because MSU, while they are an extremely well-resourced program, while they have reputation, they have facilities, they have all that, they have enough to get talent to the program. But I think we've seen in the last 4 years, like, you get talent, what do you do with it? If you just have it and none of the other stuff clicks, it doesn't really make much of a difference. So they need to find somebody that is, I think, built up programs at a smaller level or at a lesser program level within a major conference, and preferably is somewhat young, is not a retread option, and that can bring stability and adaptability. And I think there are a few names that jump out to me. Again, we're doing some serious speculating here because you don't even know.
I like it. This is good.
Yeah, I mean, healthy. This is what we're here for, right? If you go on the older side, right, you talk about, I think these guys are in their upper 50s. So it's not an ideal place to start, right? I think the dream scenario is you find somebody in their, you know, a younger guy, 40s or so, that can help grow with the program. But the names jump off the page. I mean, Lance Leopold at Kansas. I mean, you talk about winning at a program with very little talent in a competitive conference. Leopold has done that in spades at Kansas thus far.
Yep.
That's one great option. I think Dave Clawson at Wake Forest is another great option. We've talked about him many, many times. He's done some wonderful things there. I think, you know, if you take region out of it, I think a name that's going to pop up on a lot of schools' radars this year is Jonathan Smith from Oregon State. That's a big one. I mean, he's got Oregon State. This is a program that's being left on the doorstep by the Pac-12. That's 2 years in a row now been ranked consistently in the top 20. I mean, we saw DJU at Clemson look totally lost.
Yep.
He has refound himself to a large degree under Jonathan Smith. The fact that he's winning these games at Oregon State, I mean, that is about as remote as it gets from a college football talent acquisition perspective. Is nothing short of incredibly impressive. So, you know, I don't know, like, I don't think he's necessarily a Midwest guy. And I think, again, the part of not, oh my God, wow. I was just watching the Broncos game. They just caught a Hail Mary with no time left. That was crazy. but anyways, if you can't, like, I don't know how much being in the Midwest is important to Michigan State anymore. Like, once upon a time, it was very important to have those Midwest ties. If that's still important, they probably don't go with Smith. But if it's not, and they're willing to get abstract, Smith is probably a potentially just a great option if he's even interested in leaving. And I do think that that will work in Michigan State's favor because, like, let's be honest, Oregon State not in the Pac-12 as opposed to Michigan State, even if you're the 8th best team in your conference, like, that's a big step up in terms of resources and you know, the bullets in your chamber. So, yeah, we'll see. Those are three names that jumped out to me. I know there's a lot more that people are talking about, though. I personally, though, one thing I do want to get out in front of, I don't want an assistant coach.
Okay.
I think if I had it up to me, I'd definitely make sure they hire somebody that's been there and done that, that has some experience, that has some stability, that understands what it takes to run a college football business as much as anything else. So, really just – I personally can't stress that enough.
Yeah, I 100% agree. There is a ton of talented coordinators out there. That's not the issue. This is a top 30 job in the country. The reason it's a top 30 job, undisputed, is that between the Big Ten and this SEC, there are going to be 34 teams. Ipso facto, you got a top 30 program because we're better than Vandy, we're better than Northwestern, you know, fill in the gaps. So, you know that there are coaches on the outside looking in, even in the ACC, even in the Big 12, because they know that that next contract that the coach is going to get is going to be way more on the market rate than they're going to get in any other conference. So you have a job that is a destination job and, you know, a jump up job. And you don't need to take a coordinator to do that. You can take a CEO, you can take a head coach and have them go find those great coordinators Like, that is also possible with the amount of money that MSU is willing to spend on the coordinators, because lateral moves happen all the time. You know, maybe it can be a step up for some as well from the coordinator position. So, you know, one thing that jumped out to me was, we talked about it, but just the difference in creativity from the Washington coaching staff and Michigan State's. Like, that's half of it, right? Like, figure out how to use your guys to the best of their ability. Like, that's the whole game. And you have MSU out there running a precision timing-based offense with guys that haven't been in that situation and aren't succeeding at it and are proving, you know, they're okay at it, but they proved they couldn't do it in real time in this game. And then you have Washington doing literally whatever they wanted because the looks were so different and creative that MSU, frankly, was just lost in the sauce. And Washington's going to do that to a lot of teams, but that's the whole point. You got to get coordinators. Like, bad example, but the Lions, we're Lions fans, aren't who they are if without their offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson. They aren't. He's creative. That's what you kind of want, right? Like, you got to have someone that's doing things a little bit differently. So, anyway.
Yeah, I want to throw a couple more names into that.
Yeah, go for it.
Really quick. Well, before I forget, because I was thinking off the top of my head, and it wasn't – I want to remember a couple here. Mike Elko from Duke, he – if you can win at Duke, another great example, I think you can win anywhere. And he's won a couple – you know, three games at Duke. That's fantastic already this year. One that I think is maybe not a huge sleeper, but a sleeper is Jason Candle, who is Toledo's head coach. He's been there for 9 years, won 55 games. He's only 43 years old. And again, he went at Toledo. I'm pretty, again, Midwest guy, you know, confident that, you know, at least it would make a little bit of sense. And then this one is a sleeper, but Chris Kleeman, who is Kansas State's head coach.
Dude, uh-huh.
He was at North Dakota State for 5 years. I think he won four national championships. He's gone to Kansas State. All he's done is win. They've been ranked consistently in the top 15 to 20. He's 55, so a little bit on the older end of probably what you're looking for. But again, if you are looking for a guy who has had success at every level in hard places to win, like Kansas State and North Dakota State, that's about as random as it gets. You know, you have to give Kleeman a little bit of a look. So those are just a couple more I wanted to throw on at the plate.
Those are really, really good ones. Like you said, the Kansas State job, they're top 15. Yeah, we'll talk about them in a little bit. They took an L this week. But again, that's a guy that's looking to get out of there. Like, that's a guy that's ready to make a move up. So, yeah, MSU, you know, the glass half full is there's an opportunity here to make a great hire. And we just will see who it may be. But like you said, probably need to, we're going to have to, bite the bullet here the rest of the season. You want to transition to the games that took place here? Because unless I go have another shot of Malort, I don't want to, I got to get this taste out of my mouth. So,
all right, let's do it.
All right, let's fire through. We were talking about Kansas State, and I wanted to point out that Missouri won this game, but it was the most creative way to win I've seen in a while. Missouri goes all, has a tie game, 27-27. They get down to kick a field goal. They get the guys out there, and they don't realize that the play clock is running. They're all on the sideline, and the play clock runs out before they can run a play. And they get a 5-yard penalty. So now it's a 61-yard field goal, 61 yards, and they do it. And this kid comes in and sets the school record, I think, for longest field goal to beat Kansas State. It was incredible. Like, college football is hilarious because of shit like that. So shout out Missouri, who is a job that is worse than Michigan State's, by the way. I can do that as we go through these games. So.
Oh, yeah. I will also say, you said top 30. I don't know if you're giving it totally enough credit. I think Michigan State is, I'm going to say top comfortably between the top 20 and 25. I think it's a top 25 job in the country, even when they're down like this in terms of resources and conference and all that. But yes, sure. Definitely ahead of Missouri.
Sure. Okay. I like it. Let's keep it going. Florida State goes to Boston College. Boston College is awful. Florida State survives 31-29. The biggest note for me was that like Keon Coleman didn't have a catch and only participated really in punt returning. And I get like playing on Heisman to mix it up is fun, but what are they doing? Like, what are they doing? What are they doing?
I have no idea. I also know that he, I was watching the end of that game. He muffed a punt at the end of that game and almost gave the ball back to Boston Bollage, by the way, rocking the red bandana right. Game in this one. Pretty sweet. Their quarterback is fun though. I don't know if you got a chance to watch him. Thomas Castellanos, who was a UCF transfer, I believe, is a spectacular athlete. But yeah, this would have been a very Florida State loss. So I wasn't necessarily shocked to see it happen. But yeah, they survived. You don't just walk into Chestnut Hill, John.
That's true. People forget. Tennessee did not just walk into the swamp, losing 29-16 in a game that wasn't particularly close. Tennessee got a little ahead of their skis here. And Florida took care of them. This was a good old fashioned rivalry. There was a lot of chirping, a lot of fighting. It was a fun one.
Yeah, I mean, Florida ran the ball all over Tennessee. Trevor Etienne, 23 carries, 172 yards, and a tutty. That's bully ball right there.
Yeah, it was odd to see Tennessee, like, not that Florida did that, but that they struggled so much versus Utah earlier. So, mm-hmm. Okay, quick hitters. Georgia and Bama really struggled, and I thought that was worth calling out. And this would the reason I call that out is because it would appear that nobody is good. I don't see a team that's good. Have you seen a good team yet?
Nope. That's a firm no. I have not.
I have one team I haven't seen, so I can't confirm if they're good or not. USC is still playing on refrigerators, so I have no idea if they're good. But they're the only one that I am willing to give a shot at it. But beyond that, I've seen everybody else, and I don't like what I see.
Well, there is no alpha.
Mm-mm.
I mean, it's just the fact of the matter. I mean, Georgia and Bama are your likeliest candidates. Bama won 17-3 against UCF.
It was bad.
Like, I'm sorry. I mean, you could make a case for Ohio State, I suppose, but like,
no,
I don't know. I'm not putting Michigan anywhere near good just yet. Florida State with what they did this week, no, not quite. I think Notre Dame is in the is potential. Notre Dame's looking pretty good this year, but Penn State, watched a little bit of them against Illinois. Illinois, by the way, we'll talk about that. They might have a defense still. But yeah, no, I think this is. I think we said it from the beginning of the year. This is as wide open a year as I think I can remember since like 2007, when it was that wide open, crazy, you know, 12 different teams being number one or whatever it was. So yeah, wide open. And I still don't trust USC.
One team that sees the door open is Colorado, who survives an double overtime thriller against Colorado State in a game that I think a lot of people were shocked was close. Considering that the Buff Mania had them as like an insane point favorite, but also because for some reason Mike Norvell decided to like poke the bear about Dion and like commenting on his like look, and like why do that? One, but Colorado State came to play, which was shocking, and Colorado needed to rely on Heisman candidate Shedeur Sanders to go 98 yards to tie the game in the fourth quarter, which was pretty impressive. But it's also Colorado State, so it's kind of like this whole thing is very fun, but in a like bad team in the Big East basketball tournament has now won like three games in a row, and it's getting fun.
I mean, it's about to be rough. No, they're not good. They're not a top 25 team. I think they're just not. It's fun. You're right. It's great. Rubber's about to meet the road. Okay. they're about to go on the road to Oregon next weekend, and then they're about to play USC at home. You know what's a bad thing to do before you play those two teams? Mm-hmm. Give up 35 points to Colorado State.
It's true. That's a good litmus test for people.
Yeah. This has been fun. It's great. I think it's genuinely good for college football, like that there's this attention on a program that was once great. And I think Will Hunter may have said it to me or us that, like, I think we underestimated how cool Colorado could be as a program, just like color wise and just swag wise. The gold and black is a elite color combination, which makes it all the much sadder that they have been so irrelevant for so long. But yeah, I think it's good for college football. It's fun that they started 3-0. I think they're going to get absolutely destroyed the next 2 weeks. And it's going to reopen the door for whomever.
It's great for college football. That game, despite starting at like 10 p.m. Eastern time, was the most watched college football game of the week. Like,
that's awesome.
That is awesome. Colorado State. Like, that is cool. That is good for this
sport. I agree. It's a very cool, weird regional rivalry that's good for college football. I agree.
That's right. All right, let's quickly go through, because there weren't too many surprises in the Big Ten, but we'll start at the beginning here. Maryland 42, Virginia 14, which looks to be a very September Maryland score. But Austin, again, for the second week in a row, the Terrapins go down 14-0 out of the gate. And obviously they made it up, because Virginia was worst in the ACC in total offense and total defense going into this game, and which is tough to do. So I haven't learned anything about Maryland, but you know, that's no different than any other year.
Yeah, I've learned literally nothing about them. You know, I think we'll talk about them a lot more in a little bit, but there's nothing to be said about beating Virginia in football. I mean, yeah, their best offensive player by a lot is a Northwestern transfer.
Oh,
Malik Washington. So we'll leave that there.
Oh boy. Wisconsin takes down Georgia Southern 35-14. Again, that score doesn't look like much, but if you were watching the game, they were down 14-7. And Georgia Southern had everything going. I'm just going to say this. The Fickell era is off to, while they are 2-1, I'd still call it a pretty rocky start, considering that, maybe the expectations.
I think the way I'll put it is weird. It's a very weird start. That could get extremely weird next week when they go to Purdue. So,
yes. Oh, yeah.
That's very weird.
Okay. Louisville heads to Indianapolis to take on the Hoosiers and take down Indiana 21-14. Austin, I know you were watching this one, so tell me what happened.
I did. This is when I really felt like the sickest I've ever, like, I was like, man, I've got, something's going on. They blew it. Indiana, in very Indiana football fashion, just completely blew it. They had the ball on the 1 yard line, 4th and 1 against Louisville, with like 2 minutes to go in this game with a chance to tie, and got stuffed at the 1 yard line. Not even particularly close. One thing I'll say, and I think I talked about it last week. I think they have a quarterback though. Okay. I think Taven Jackson is, I think, going to be, especially for Indiana, a very good quarterback. Went for 299 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 pick. I thought was pretty darn good. They also have a really good linebacker in Aaron Casey, who I was surprised that I didn't know more about. Louisville, I think when they get into the meat of ACC play, things are going to get dicey for them. But Indiana's probably going to get beat quite a few times in the Big Ten. But I do think that Taven Jackson, he's only redshirt freshman. They did it the right thing by giving the keys over to him, because I think he's going to, by the time he's a junior, maybe even later in this year, sophomore, junior seasons, he's going to be a really nice quarterback.
I know a team that struggles against quarterbacks.
I don't.
Penn State goes to Illinois, Drew Aller's first away game. We were watching this with a microscope. Penn State wins 30-13, covers, but was an elite start for Drew. How are we still feeling about that Penn State national championship prediction?
I'm sticking with it. I can't back off now after one
game. No, I know, but how are you feeling about it?
I feel
better or worse? Better or worse?
Well, certainly worse.
Oh, okay. I thought this was a fine win.
This is a fine win. So I guess it's. I feel better because you have to muddle through these wins.
Yeah, exactly.
Every team does. They picked off Luke Altmyer four times.
Yeah.
I mean, the defense really played their tails off in this game. Offense for Penn State kind of scuffled. Like you said, Aller, I watched a little bit of this one too, just kind of looked weird, just uncomfortable. And that's credit to Illinois. Again, Jerzon Newton is a stud. If you watch this one, you know who he is. He had one TFL. He had two passes defensed, which is actually kind of funny. Six tackles. For a defensive tackle, that's a lot of different stats. He's a stud. But yeah, Aller just looked uncomfortable. The only guy to throw a touchdown for Penn State in this game was actually Trey Potts, the Minnesota running back transfer. So yeah, a weird one, but again, you still win by 17 and you just kind of scuffle through it. You can't feel too bad about that.
Iowa scuffled for a while, but pulled out a 41-10 win over Western Michigan. The Iowa average is now up to 28.3 points per game. They're ahead of the curve. Brian Ferentz is ahead of 25 points per game to keep his job. We are we're cooking in Iowa City with 41 points.
As they say, the funniest part about this is they scored 41 points and Cade McNamara threw for 103 yards, two touchdowns, and two interceptions. It's great. Like, they can't do anything normally. Like, they just refuse to play normal football. And I love it. It's one of the things that makes college football so great. It's just dumb programs like this.
This is the meme of where the mom turns around and screams at their kid, "Why can't you be normal?" And the kid just, Iowa, you're the weird kid, dude.
Yeah, no question.
Duke handles Northwestern 38-14. We talked about Duke. They got a nice coach over there.
Sure do. It'd be a real shame if someone came and took them. 3-0 Duke. Riley Leonard, 15-20 for 219 yards. Nothing too crazy. But then on the ground, 97 yards and two tutties on the ground. Northwestern. I'm telling you, he's going to get himself drafted. I don't know what he is in the pros, but he's a fun, frisky type of player. I don't know how else to describe him. If I'm Northwestern, man, sim to end. Like, this is not.
We're not too far off. We're in the same boat.
It is not going to be fun for these guys the rest of the year.
Just suck. Why don't we get to play them? Like,
bro, these damn divisions. I will never let it go.
Minnesota heads to Chapel Hill and loses 31-13 in a slow, methodic loss. My household played two Round one NFL quarterbacks this weekend in Drake May and Michael Penix. It went about as expected. Any other thoughts about QB? He's QB2 still, right? You feel like he's the second quarterback off the board, Drake May?
As of today. But he's doing a lot there. Their offensive, I watched a bit of the first half of this one, maybe a little into the second half. If you're an NFL team, nothing's changed in your mind, even though he threw two interceptions in this game. He's getting no help. Mm-hmm. I actually feel for Drake May because over his two other years as a starter, I guess back into like the Sam Howell era, they had some explosive like wide receivers and running backs. There's plenty of dudes in the NFL now from those teams. And outside of Nate McCollum, who had 15 catches for 165 yards and a touchdown in this one, aside from him, May's not getting a lot of help. He's running for his life in this game. And credit to Minnesota. I think Minnesota, despite giving up 31 in this game, Minnesota might have a little defense. I don't know how they're scoring.
They don't.
Ever.
They won't.
Right. Well, that's just it. Kelly Akmanis, 11 of 29 for 133, zero touchdowns and a pick. So
didn't go to the portal knowing that was your guy. That's awesome.
Yeah. So anybody who suggests PJ Fleck to me for Michigan State head coach, I would suggest being out of my reach when you make that suggestion, because that is not a good one. But anyways, yeah, North Carolina, again, I don't think they're good, but May's nasty.
Rutgers just doing all the right things this season. Beating Virginia Tech 35-16. This is a year I don't need Greg Schiano to have like figured out how to make Rutgers competent. Like my team needs games against Rutgers. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, if you want to feel better, Gavin Wimsatt threw for how many yards do you think Gavin Wimsatt threw for in this game? Knowing that by me asking this question, it wasn't a lot.
Well, but also knowing Rutgers scored 35 points, I'm going to say at least 150 yards.
46.
Come on.
46.
Yards.
Under 50.
Why? What happened?
I can't possibly be the one. Well, how did they score? Question.
What went?
Three rushing touchdowns for Kyle Monongai. Yeah, him. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I don't know how they got the other. Well, Wimsatt did throw for one to Christian Dremel, but my goodness, that is bad. So here, okay. So not you know, we're having fun now on this show, and I don't want to bring the mood. I don't want to bring the mood back down, but when you worry about what Michigan State could become, and when I say this hire is important, look at Virginia Tech.
Oh, no.
Virginia Tech in the late 1990s, even well into the early 2000s, was maybe a little exaggeration here, but borderline college football.
They were second tier. They were second tier in a good way. They were, that's not a negative. Like
they were right there.
They're right,
right there with any, like you said, second tier program, which again, even in a dream scenario, that's where Michigan State wants
that's
to
be. Want to be.
Realistically, that's where you want to end up. And that's where they were. And when you were you're like, okay, how bad could it really be? This is how bad it could really be. Losing by 19 to Rutgers in the third game of the season to fall to 1-2. Like after a loss to Purdue.
Purdue.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly how bad it could be. Losing to Purdue and Rutgers in back-to-back weeks. That's exactly how bad it could be.
You've just described a Northwestern fall.
Exactly.
All right. So Western Kentucky, the Toppers, I got to admit, all of their staff wearing top on their phones. Loses 63-10. Ohio State's getting the mojo back here.
When you identify the problem, apply Marvin Harrison Jr. rinse, repeat. Dude, there was one play in this game that I saw where I think he was actually double covered and he split the safety that was coming down and the corner, like off the line, didn't get bumped and just he hit 22 miles an hour on his dead sprint speed and just like he was 15 yards past both of them in like six steps. It's as long as he is playing. And again, Kyle McCord, starting to figure it out here. 19 of 20, 23, 318 and three.
Right.
Pretty good. You know, when you have that and you realize, oh, I should just throw it to Marvin Harrison all the time. Like, and then you have guys like Carnell Tate and Mecca Egbuka combining for three touchdowns through the air. Like, I think we were overstating concerns about Ohio State. They're going to be fine, and it's going to be really annoying. They scored 35 points in the second quarter of this game.
True. Really quickly about Ohio State, you know, we did toss them to dead. That was rude of us. They have so much talent.
Yeah.
Like,
that was extremely premature.
And also, we were just kind of probably projecting because we are annoyed how good they are all the time. But watching Washington's receivers, that was when they were making some of those catches that were pretty well defended. I will not lie, Austin. Some of those catches were just NFL catches. I was like,
NFL receivers.
That was Marvin Harrison, was it 2 years ago or whatever it was? Like, just doing ridiculous stuff. So he's must see TV. Not must-see TV. Actually, for me, the sickos, it is watching Nebraska play. Winning 35-11, a very Rocky Lombardi score. Gets in their winning column for Matt Rhule. Anything to take away here for Nebraska?
Quite literally nothing.
All right. Yeah, the box score wasn't hind to Heinrich Harburg at quarterback, by the way.
Yeah, that might be the only thing to take away is the fact that Jeff Sims got replaced.
Come on. Speaking of lines, Rocky Lombardi went 11 of 28 for 73 yards and a pick.
Hmm. But yeah, well, you know, moving
sure.
on.
Sure, sure, sure. Michigan takes down Bowling Green 31-6. Pretty uninspiring for a 40.5 point favorite. That's 0-3 against the spread, and that's three unders so far. What do you think?
I mean, if you talk about a word to describe Michigan football so far, I would say it's uninspiring. You know, the defense has given up all of 16 points in three games. Okay, that's great. You've played East Carolina, UNLV, and Bowling Green. I actually, as a Michigan fan, I don't know, again, that I've learned if I am a Michigan fan, to be very clear, I am not. I haven't learned anything. This does nothing for me. It doesn't make me feel better or worse. It doesn't make me feel like it does absolutely nothing for me. If anything, I come away from this game actually worried because JJ McCarthy threw three interceptions and only had eight completions against Bowling Green. Like, again, that's what I'm worried about. So I don't know that you're learning anything about Michigan for another. I don't know that you're learning anything about Michigan until they play Penn State on November 11th. I mean that genuinely. I'm dead serious. Their schedule should embarrass Michigan fans. It should embarrass Michigan fans.
No. They can't control the league, and I will go to bat and say we'll get to their next matchup. Okay. Lastly, Purdue loses 35-20 to Syracuse. We called it. And yeah. Man, things are just rough in West Lafayette.
Again, another program that was Big Ten royalty for many years is now losing at home by 15 to Syracuse. Again, you ask yourself, how bad can it get? This is how bad it can get.
They were like never royalty. So let's just be like really nice. Well, to the 2 years
they had
was there.
Yeah, they had like a couple fun years, I guess is really the way to put it.
All right, national preview. We're going to keep moving because this slate is loaded. Specifically, as we were thinking about how good Michael Penix was, I was like, wow, the Pac-12 actually has a ton of great quarterbacks. We might see Cam Rising against, I believe, true freshman at UCLA, once a Michigan State recruit. And I don't know why I'm blanking on the name all of a sudden.
Dante Moore?
Thank you. Is starting there at UCLA. Is
really?
That? I might be making that up, but who knows? This is a big one. Two top 25 teams. Utah held serve against Florida at home, but UCLA might be a different animal. What do you think happens here?
It feels like whenever people play at Utah for whatever reason, it gives trouble. So, I mean, I also don't know much about how UCLA has done this season in full transparency.
Dante Moore's got 615 yards, 7 touchdowns, and a pick as a true freshman.
Wow. I did not realize he was playing. I thought Ethan Garber started the season, but apparently I have not been keeping up with my UCLA football. So, yeah, that's – I mean, true freshman on the road in a tough place to win, that's not an easy game. But
no. You know what to do here.
Yeah, you know what to do here. This is a Utah win.
Exactly. Oklahoma takes on Big 12 foe Cincinnati, who lost to Miami, Ohio last week. Maybe looking ahead, not so great. Oklahoma, 13.5 point favorites. I don't know if I'm going to – I'm probably not going to tune into this one. But
yeah, I mean, Oklahoma, they're sitting in the middle of the top 25. Mm-hmm. And they played nobody overly impressive. Arkansas State, SMU, Tulsa. They've scored over 66 points twice.
Yep.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, this will get the energy at Cincinnati will be huge for this. I think this is their first Big 12 game that they've hosted. So that's a big deal. But Oklahoma, kind of sneaky, like, again, you see how shaky everybody else looks. You wonder if maybe, like, Dylan Gabriel and some of these other guys, maybe they're a little fun contender. We'll find out.
Oregon State and our boy Jonathan Smith head to Washington State. Ally Washington State, the leaders of the Pac-2 take off this week. Oregon State 2.5 point favorite. Both are surprise teams, both ranked in the top 25. I mean, like, let's go.
I mean, this is great. This is awesome for the future of, like, fridge watching these two teams playing against each other. I think it's fun. I think Oregon State's a better team. To be fully transparent, even if DJU isn't awesome, they've got some really good players, and they're number 14 in the country. I don't know. I love that this is a perfectly weird game. It's a great, I'll miss these Pac-12 games.
Mississippi travels to Bama. Number 13, Alabama. I believe this is the first time in like 80 weeks they're not in the top 10.
Crazy.
Bama, 6.5-point favorites, but things are looking vulnerable in Tuscaloosa.
Oof, man, I don't know what's going to happen here. I think, I just don't know who Bama's quarterback is.
They don't know.
I mean, it's Ty Simpson is the one who is one of the kids who came in and played. Tyler Buckner was awful, the Notre Dame transfer. They got lucky to beat South Florida, in all honesty. But yeah, I mean, Ty Simpson is a freshman, so at best you're relying on what is admittedly a very talented freshman. I think Ole Miss has a real shot in this one because if nothing else, they got some offense. And I don't know how Bama's rolling up offense on Ole Miss unless they just run the ball down their throats, which, you know, again, I am of the mindset to never doubt Bama, so I will still go with Bama here. But this is the most I think I've ever been tested.
Yeah, it's true. Worth checking out. This is the game that everyone had circled for all offseason, but Clemson hosting Florida State, only a 1.5-point favorite. Dabo Packwatch is on high alert here, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, this is like a who can shake the program stigma game, because like, is it going to be Florida State choking or is it going to be Clemsoning? Like, I don't know which one of these two things will come through here, because you could tell Florida State was looking ahead last week, and quietly Clemson has bounced back from, you know, their loss to Duke with some dominating wins against Charleston Southern and Florida Atlantic. So again, not exactly powerhouses, but they've gotten things rolling a little bit. Playing at Clemson, never an easy thing to do. So I don't know. Should be a fun one.
Ducks of Oregon host the Colorado Primetimes. Oregon, 20.5-point favorites here. You're feeling good about that?
It's a lot of points. I don't know how I feel against the spread there. But what I will say is, I think this is going to be a track meet. I mean, I think Colorado will score. But the thing is now, like, Travis Hunter is not going to play in this game. He's going to be out for a couple weeks. And that is, I mean, to any team in the country, losing Travis Hunter would be a big deal. So especially to Colorado. So that's because you lose now your best corner and your best wideout. So that's a huge, huge deal. I think Oregon wins this one somewhat comfortably. People kind of come back to earth on Deion. But that said, if Colorado finds a way to win this game without Travis Hunter, if I'm Deion, I stop coaching. And I start taking the highest bid, and I start figuring out where I'm going next.
That's awesome. Moving on to the Big Ten, Wisconsin, a 7-point headed to Purdue in a game that just feels like Purdue will be winning and find a way to choke at the end.
That's what it feels like. But I could also see this going the other way, because Wisconsin's flirted with disaster a few times. And again, credit to Washington State. I don't think they're a bad team by any stretch.
Right.
But, I'm just not sure entirely how to feel about this one just yet, I suppose.
We'll make a pick. Let me see what you think.
Make a pick. I'm going to go with Wisconsin, but I'm going to say they're not going to cover.
Okay. That makes sense. Michigan, a 25-point favorite against Rutgers. Competent Rutgers, by the way, and a somewhat incompetent Michigan per Michigan standards. How do you feel about 25 points?
25 is a lot, given
Harbaugh's back. Harbaugh's coaching.
But how slow Michigan plays games, 25 feels like a lot. I don't know, Rutgers is frisky, but they're not going to be able to score very much. So I think Michigan probably comes pretty damn close to covering if they don't cover. But again, I don't learn anything about Michigan until November.
Over-under is 45. I'm just calling it out because Michigan is – I'm riding Michigan unders until it burns me. I'm 3-0. Florida Atlantic at Illinois. Illinois has the most chaotic schedule outside of Purdue that I've ever seen.
Yeah, man, this is a lot to do with the Tom Herman led Florida Atlantic. Owls. Oh, if I remember correctly. Yes.
That name has been floated for the MSU job, by the way.
Yeah, that's another one we've heard from time to time. We'll see. I mean, he did give us the okay, cool, hook 'em line, which I thank him for. But, you know, I don't know yet. I don't know yet about Tom. This game, Illinois should win. But this is also Illinois football we're talking about. They could definitely blow it.
Nebraska, 20-point favorite against Louisiana Tech. I think it's cool Louisiana Tech has a football team. I don't talk about them a lot, so...
Man, you couldn't pay me to bet on Nebraska football right now.
20 points, a lot of points.
Don't care. Yeah. Well, no, exactly. It's a lot of points. I couldn't tell you. I think Josh McCown played at Louisiana Tech, but it's the only person I know associated with the university.
Indiana's getting 17.5 versus the Zips of Akron. How do you feel about that?
Feels dangerous, but...
You like it. I think you're feeling Indiana.
I don't hate it. I don't like that I like Indiana football. I'll admit that. I don't like that Taven Jackson is getting me to like sort of buy in. Like, I wish they were in a different conference.
Minnesota, 13-point favorite in Evanston against Northwestern. That game's going to be rough.
Yeah. What's the over-under in that one? Because whatever it is, just absolutely obliterate the under.
This may be this. I haven't even looked yet. I'm going to pull it up pretty quickly. This might be the smallest in the entire nation. If now that you bring it to top of mind,
I mean, it has to be close. If it's not,
all right, we're looking at a 38 over under. Yeah.
That's exactly the number I thought it was going to be, and I still think I'm hammering the under. I don't know how Northwestern scores in this game, and Minnesota is not making it a lot easier.
Yeah, this one feels like I'm going to go 16-3.
Yeah, this feels like a six. Yeah, somewhere in that neighborhood. You're not getting the 38, so I might go place that bet right now.
Everyone's favorite weird rivalry, Iowa heads to Happy Valley, where Penn State is a 14-point favorite. I think Penn State takes care of business easily here.
Yeah, I don't know how Iowa keeps up on the scoreboard. Iowa's defense is admittedly, like, certainly not bad by any stretch. I just don't know how they score enough points to keep up with Penn State. That being said, this is also a game historically that Penn State chokes because of dumb things. I think, I don't know if they, you know, so I could see that too, but I mean, I've planted my flag with Penn State, so I think they're going to win.
That's right. Then the marquee game of the week, Ohio State heads to Notre Dame, 3-point favorite Buckeyes. This is going to be a good one, man.
Winner of this game immediately vaults into everyone's, this country is wide open. This should be a national title contender candidate.
This is the national champion darling winner is the winner.
No question. And I think Notre Dame, being a home dog in this one, it feels juicy. I know Ohio State's really good. I know they've got Marvin Harrison, but I mean, Notre Dame's a good team. Sam Hartman's a really good quarterback.
He's playing a lot more games than Cal Court.
He sure has. So yeah, I like Notre Dame in this one, but the winner of this is for sure the new national championship darling.
Well, in the biggest game of the year for Michigan State, and I mean that sincerely, taking on the Maryland Terrapins, that's where we are as a program. I say it's the biggest game of the year because I think this is the game that will tell you everything that will happen the rest of the year. You lose this game and it's going to get ugly and ugly fast. If you gut out a win here, I think you can look ahead and see a handful of wins you could also gut out. And that is pretty much the takeaway for me. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know that there's necessarily a ton more to take away. I think we've said that kind of from the beginning of the season, right? Like, you would know everything you needed to know about Michigan State after 4 weeks into the season. And quite honestly, like, these first three games have gone almost exactly as we would have expected, with the exception of the Mel Tucker situation. The on-field product has not been all that like different than what we would have expected. And this game now, especially with everything else that's going on off the field, really holds like an extra piece of weight where it's like, how do you respond to adversity? Because you just got embarrassed. Thank God it was on Peacock, but yeah, you got absolutely lambasted by a team on your home field, the 10-year anniversary of your Rose Bowl team, you know, some good vibes, weirdly, like in the air from a program perspective, despite what happened to Mel, like, you know, everyone was rah-rah, you know, huddled together, you know, rally around each other, and just got destroyed. Now, you don't even have to leave home. You take that same field against the Maryland team that is doing what they do through September. They've won their games. Nothing's been spectacularly impressive, but they've scored at least 38 points in all three of their games. Talia Tagovailoa has been more or less what he's been the last few years, completing about two-thirds of his passes, has 889 yards, 5 touchdowns, 2 picks through the year. The new face at running back, Roman Hemby, is, you know, had a pretty effective first three games with 243 yards. The backup, Colby McDonald, paces him with about half the amount of carries, but is averaging 8 yards a carry and 166 yards total. They have a clear 2 go-to receivers. The one is Jashawn Jones, who is an actual receiver, and the other is tight end Corey Dykes, who leads the team in receptions and is only 3 yards behind Jones in terms of actual receiving yardage. So they spread the ball out somewhat, but they do clearly have their 2 go-to favorites. Defensively, not an overly impressive showing so far. They have, looks like, 7 sacks through 3 games. Jashawn Barham, the linebacker, leading the way there. Interception-wise, they have 4. Defensive back Tar Heap still has 2. And somehow defensive lineman Donnell Brown also has 2. That's interesting. So, yeah, I mean, Maryland's going to be what they're going to be, right? Like, they are not an especially impressive team defensively. Virginia's bad, and they gave up 14 points to Virginia, which is par for the course. They didn't give up 20 points to Charlotte. They make some silly mistakes. They're not an overly disciplined team. So MSU is going to have their opportunities. Honestly, in a lot of ways, it's like kind of looking in a mirror sort of at Michigan State. But it's, I think at this point, like a step ahead program wise in terms of stability and execution. But this is a winnable game for Michigan State. I think what they have to do is just get back to what they were doing the first 2 weeks. Find your comfort zone. You're not Maryland and Washington are not comparable talent wise. Michigan State is not. It is not going to be the same battle in the trenches. It's not going to be nearly the same offensive explosion. Michigan State can stay in this game if they just execute. And I beg our offensive coordinator, Jay Johnson, to give Noah Kim some bunnies early in this game. It has made life so hard on Noah Kim through these first 3 games, making him throw these perfect balls down the sideline, giving him difficult routes to read. Just give him some bunnies early. Get Nate Carter going a little bit and just smooth things out. If Michigan State can win this game, I think they, you know, like you said, John, they have a chance to gut out more wins. Maryland's not the worst team they're going to play the rest of the year. I look down the rest of the schedule. Iowa, obviously a good team on the road at Iowa, tough. At Rutgers, winnable game. At, you know, Michigan, always a 50-50 game, but Michigan's looking pretty damn good right now. At Minnesota, winnable game. Home against Nebraska, winnable game. At Indiana, winnable game. I think those are all winnable now. If you get embarrassed at home but to Maryland, a lot of those go off the table, and this could get real, real dark. Real, real fast. So, you know, I hope MSU's just got to stop those big chunk plays, and you have to try and control the ball offensively. And, you know, if you can do that, you got a chance.
Unfortunate that they're going up against a quarterback with the 14th most passing yards in the country. Mm. It's certainly going to be the emphasis here for Maryland. There's no reason for them to try and run the ball against, rushing defense that was not there against Washington, but I think a bit better than they performed in that game. So Maryland's going to lean on their strength, And while they don't have the athletes or the wide receivers that Washington does, you're looking at like a B plus quarterback to Michael Penix's A plus. So can you pressure him? Couldn't get to Penix, going to have to get to this guy. And if you don't, he's just going to sit back and he's going to have 400 yards. I believe he's done it against MSU. And in past years, you know, wins and losses, but this is going to be the biggest game of the year. You know, certainly worth tuning in for, because you'll get to see if you want me and Austin to watch the rest of the games for you, or if you want to join us the rest of the games.
Yeah, you'll know pretty quickly. I think you and I, John, have said since the beginning of the season, even the offseason, like this was the one that stood out as the biggest litmus test.
Yep.
Because in all likelihood, it was going to be how do you respond to losing to Washington? I don't think we knew it was going to be how do you respond to losing by 34 at home to Washington and giving up the most yardage in school history. But we always knew there was going to be some difficult element to this. So again, this isn't surprising in terms of the stakes. It's not anything I don't think any reasonable person didn't see coming. But I just think because of everything that's going on off the field, because of how ugly this Washington loss was, it just takes on an extra level of importance and significance. And if they can win, you know, they've got a chance to win 6 games, 7 games. If not, might be time to start making this basketball podcast again, John.
Hey, that's coming soon. But before we go, how short is the leash on Noah Kim?
Another performance like last week's, I think it starts to get short quick. I don't know that you see anything change here. I'll put it this way. I think the first time you would see a change at quarterback, starting quarterback, would be going into the Rutgers game.
Oh,
I, in my estimation, Kim should be allowed to have one really bad performance against a really good team. I don't think it's his fault that Michigan State lost that game by 34. If he comes out and throws up another stinker against Maryland, start to ask questions. And the only reason I'd say they don't, if he is bad, move to Caden Hauser the next week is because you go on the road to Iowa. And I don't think that it's fair, and I don't think coaches would think it's fair, to throw Hauser to the wolves against a good defense in Iowa on the road in his first career game.
Well, so Kim's never played on the road either, so does it matter?
Fine, but Kim's at least got 4 games as the starter, and I think they would look at that as the make-or-break performance. Yep. You know, and then you give – because there's a bye week after that. So yep. If you give – Hauser or whomever, you know, theoretically you would give Hauser the bye week going into a winnable game against Rutgers, and that would be how it goes. So yeah, I think Kim's got, you know, 2 more games of give us a reason to let you keep starting, and you know, see what happens from there.
All right, well, either way, we'll be there, we'll be watching, and there's a lot of other good stuff going on across the country. So I'm still managed to have a good Saturday night despite the situation, because this year is wide open.
Yeah, it's still fun, even if your team's not a part of it. So keep watching, keep enjoying. Hey, guys, this was presented by Bet Online. For John, this has been awesome. We'll catch you next week.
See ya.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.